folks, there's a whole bunch of autumny jobs outside calling. They could be saying, dig me, stake me up, ready for winter. Fact is, there's one name who'll be standing alongside you, helping you get stuck into any job over and over, and that name is as Aussie as backyard cricket. Cyclone. Sure, some gun tools are cheaper, but they won't last as long as Cyclone, because I'll tell you why. Cyclone tools are made for Australians. Get autumn done, grab your Cyclone tools from Bunnings, Mitre 10, and selected independent stores. More at cyclone.com.au.
G'day guys, Dill here. This should not come as a surprise to anyone, given he's one of the biggest and best sports broadcasts in Australia, but Brian Taylor's podcast, Life of Brian, is absolutely flying at the moment. Recently, he's had on James Brayshaw, Tony Jones, his nephew and Sydney midfielder James Rowbottom, and even horse teeth Tommy Sheridan. Life of Brian is not just about the guests. It also provides a great insight behind the scenes of the football media and BT's life away from the mic. He's a very, very quirky man. Who would have thought picking up sticks is so important? The show is hosted by his son Harrison, and it's fair to say the apple doesn't fall far from the tree because Harrison gives Brian a run for his money. Life of Brian is a clubby sports podcast, and it should be in your rotation. IllyXX.
The footy was created on the lands of the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation. We pay our respects to all First Nations people and acknowledge their profound contribution to the game we bloody love.
This is a Grouse House podcast.
Hello, everyone. Today we're joined by, it's fair to say, one of the most iconic voices in Australian sport, and for good or bad, one of the reasons this silly pod exists. And for many of us, he's graced our tellies nightly for the past 2 decades, acting as a yardstick for standards in sport, but also reminding people like myself why we love talking and thinking about sport every day. He's a respected voice in sport whose work you can see nightly on Fox Footy or daily on SEN. In fact, you can now even listen to Jared's elite commentary in sync using the SEN app, which now allows you to align your TV coverage with the SEN coverage. I highly recommend you check it out. This is something Tom and I genuinely almost talked about last week, but it's an absolute honour to welcome our newest mate, Jared Waitley. Hi, Jared.
Broden, it's lovely to see you. Thanks for inviting me on.
It's an honour. Have you had good feedback to the SEN Sync app?
Yes, very much so. And it was sort of a bit of an underground movement. It was just put there for people to find themselves, which is not done terribly often.
Yes.
And people found it, they found it rapidly, and it solves one of those great conundrums. Is when I was at the ABC, there was, I'm sure it was at RMIT, they put their tech department to build a unit which they called the Jared Waitley Synchrotron, so that you could sync your TV and your radio for
right.
a call. And so there was all sorts of layers that went into it, and I imagine it was this gigantic contraption, and now it's simply done on the SEN app. So, yeah, it's the more choice, the better, isn't it? Find what you like, find what suits you, and if this makes it a step easier, then all the better.
I didn't write this down as a question, but I think when we're recording this tomorrow night, I think it's you and Matt Hill as the two main callers. I love Matt Hill, and I'm so excited that he's now on Fox as well. Have you worked with him much?
I worked with him last year. Actually, we go back a fair way as we were splitting calling race meetings at the ABC during the Melbourne Cup Carnival for a while. So, yeah, I love Matt. His voice is so rich and reassuring. And he is one of those, he crosses over multiple sports.
Yeah.
So there's nothing more reassuring than walking into Flemington and hearing his voice over the PA, but then to sit with him and that the infectiousness and the authority that he has calling a footy game, and then what he's done with the rowing at the Olympics. He's one of our finest broadcasters.
100% agree. Our generation, who know you very, very well, might not know your story and how you got into sport. My first memory of you was being on the fence at the MCG in the 2000s as a boundary rider, yep. And you were always very nice, and you would always get photos with everyone. So, you know, thank you for that. But when did you always want to do sport? How did you choose this as a career, and how did you crack in?
Yeah, so I had this dream as a kid to be a sports broadcaster. And my 12-year-old self would barely be able to believe that I get to do a radio show and I get a nightly TV show. That's sort of the dream. So I can remember as a kid sitting with Dad at the footy, and I've actually never asked him why he said it, but he said to me, imagine if they paid you to be here. And I can trace the whole idea back to that.
Your dad said that at the footy, that's your...
Yep. And so in my final years of school, I was either going to do journalism or law. And thankfully, so I was a kid of LA law. but the paperwork would have killed me. So I had this idea of what being a lawyer was, which is nothing like the reality. So yeah, sport's always been my passion. I got a cadetship at the Herald Sun straight out of school. So I'm Herald Sun trained, 6 years there, then to Channel 10 as their senior sports reporter, added the ABC to that, and then Fox Footy, and now SEN. So yeah, I'm incredibly fortunate to have had I see myself referred to every now and then as a veteran. I still feel like just a youngster finding my way, but yeah, yep. I've been doing it for a while now.
Yeah, great. When you're talking about the cadetship and the early 10 days, are you doing scoops? Like, are you doing waiting in the car park kind of situation? Or
so a lot of it was the grunt work when you're a cadet. So it was the 5 point. So when you open up the paper and the page of sports results in tiny print, that was what you're in charge of. So it was your glamorous job to do that. But I found it, I loved doing it because there was so much in there that I valued. And you ended up, you know, I was an 18-year-old making the choices of which ones make it and which ones don't. And then you'd get the cranky Cricket Association rings. Why aren't our scores in the paper? Oh, that was my fault. I put the pigeon racing in instead. So I really enjoyed that. So I learned all sorts of aspects of journalism. I worked police rounds and courts and the Weekly Times. I covered cattle sales at the Weekly Times. And built that broad base of journalism, which had nothing to do with sport at the time. And then I added a little bit of sport. I would work a sixth shift, usually on Saturdays for the Sunday Herald Sun, at footy or racing or cricket, which were my passions.
Yeah, right. And what point did you land at the ABC?
So when I started working at Channel 10, they added me as their journo to some of their pre-match coverages. And then Tim Lane asked me, did I have aspirations to call? And in the background, I'd been preparing myself to call.
How do you prepare to?
Well, in those days, there were the spare boxes at the footy, which I don't think is the same luxury now with the saturation coverage. But I would go every Saturday afternoon with a couple of like-mindeds, and we'd go and sit and call the footy for real for no one.
Right.
Because it's all about repetition and flying hours. So I did that for a couple of years to a point where if I got the opportunity, I was ready for it. And then when I called my first game for the ABC, which was a Melbourne-Adelaide game at Princes Park, and I've probably called every weekend since.
Melbourne and Adelaide at Princes Park.
Yeah, so it's probably pretty easy to find as to what year it is because it was one of those odd, they were playing weird games at Princes Park in those years.
I wonder why we got pushed out there. We actually went to a preseason game there the other day and it was like, it's such a nice vibe and should be brought back in some respect.
Yes, it's for those, particularly those games and for AFLW, it does have that lovely suburban throwback feel to it.
Well, yeah, Max and I, who's on the camera, we just were looking for a seat and we ended up genuinely in some sort of box where there could have been bodies and things. Like, there's just rooms in that place. Apparently, there's a mosquito urinal. Did you start Offsiders? Were you at the start of Offsiders?
Yeah, so Barry Cassidy had Insiders going, the politics show, and he and I spoke. Well, he posed the idea to me. He really wanted a sports show for two reasons. One, if Collingwood ever won a premiership, he wanted a Sunday morning show to revel in it, and he wanted a preview show to the Melbourne Cup, which he thought had lapsed over time. And so I reckon he pitched it to me one November and took him another 12 months to get it up, but his persistence and ingenuity secured that. So we used to go Insiders, then there was the business show, and then Offsiders would go after that. And then we came back to back. And at that point, I had the great honour of Barry handing that over to me to host.
When you take a show like that, do you sit down and create, when we make TV shows, we often create a Bible, which is we believe this, this is what we want. Do you, with a show like that, or is it more simple or is it?
I think there were fundamental beliefs to it, that there was a place for an intelligent conversation around sport to play potentially for part of the market that was underserviced. The great truth of footy is it is the language of, if we just isolated it to Melbourne, it is the language of the town. And that is true from the boardroom through to the drip tray and over to the tuck shop and everywhere else. So I think Barry held a view that the issues in sport were getting so rich and so challenging that it was worthy of that sort of serious discussion. And he brought Roy Masters and Caroline Wilson. So he got the key opinion makers to come and have a serious discussion around the culture of sport, the business of sport, the law of sport. And in a way, the playing of sport was subsidiary to that. It wasn't a show that chose to document results. It was a show that chose to debate issues. And it was a great forum for it. So that's how we got to know Ange Postecoglou, really, is...
He was one of
our panelists, yeah, for a lot of years. And then we know what's grown since.
And off that as well was your second show, which is still going very, very strong. What year is it now?
We'd be 13, I reckon. So our first year, we started in the middle of 2010.
Yes.
And then had the bonus show with the drawn grand final. And so there were a couple of shows started and we were given a run for the rest of the season to see how it would go and see if it would get picked up. And that was when Fox Footy wasn't going. It was in Fox the lapse Sports, yeah. years. It had been closed down before it reopened. So started it up as some sort of media show, two journos, the whole landscape of footy from a particular point of view, not the strategy or the tactics of it, but more the news of it. And then we got renewed for the next year, and then I think Fox Footy returned and they chose it as the nightly show. And
yeah,
and we're still together.
You're still together. Yeah. Some days of the week you are. Some days he doesn't show.
Yes.
I'm curious to know, you talked about footy being the language of this of Australia. Do you would spend a lot of your time talking about football,
yep,
and you have other loves. Do you still love footy? What do you love about footy this far in?
Oh, yes. I love everything about it. I find it entrancing. So the spectacle of the game, there's really no other sport like it, I don't think. It's peculiarities, it's unique aspects. The fact that you could get the most dire game, but you could still have the mark of the year taken at any moment in time. I love that we are transfixed by it, that the mood of the town is set by what's happening in football. People live the journey of their teams. Their mood is very much governed by how they're going. So there's a commonality, there's a universality to it, but there's a connection to it. And you can't manufacture that sort of connection. People are their teams in a way. You take on the persona of it, you take on the burden of it, you take on the joy of it. So yeah, I think the on-field is utterly spectacular, but this phenomenon of how it binds us together as a people, that's very real for me. You don't have to confect that. You don't have to make that up. I think it's what, you know, whenever I travel to tell people about Melbourne, if you come to Melbourne, I'll show you the best thing in the world. I'll take you to the MCG and sit you with 80,000 people, and that's as good as it gets, I reckon.
Beautifully said. Folks, there's a whole bunch of autumny jobs outside calling. They could be saying, dig me, stake me up, ready for winter. Fact is, there's one name who'll be standing alongside you, helping you get stuck into any job over and over, and that name is as Aussie as backyard cricket, Cyclone. Sure, some gun tools are cheaper, but they won't last as long as Cyclone, because I'll tell you why. Cyclone tools are made for Australians. Get autumn done, grab your Cyclone tools from Bunnings, Mitre 10, and selected independent stores. More at cyclone.com.au. And so where do you feel your role is in AFL now? Because there's genuine moments where your opinion or what you say will affect the way that things move, particularly goal review systems. And
I'm not having much success there, if we're really honest.
You are the lead advocate, I would say, for change. Do you feel when you have an opinion or something to say that you are affecting in any way, or are you purely looking, or?
I think you observe and you document and you debate, and then whether you influence or not is a bit more organic, and I don't think you can really insert yourself into that. And I don't think it's really appropriate too, but you can certainly construct an informed debate. So have as much information as you can and have it accurate,
yeah,
and then disseminate and interpret from there. So I think we're so lucky with the whole spectrum of footy. We've got everything. We've got the shouters. We've got the hot takers, which is such the modern phenomenon. And then right through, we have just an incredible body of former players and coaches to explain the game to us. And then because it matters so much, so the laws of the game matters, what the tribunal does every week matters, the scoring in the game matters, is these things, whether it's you hold it to a level of account or insist on a standard or whatever that is, there's a place for that debate too. So that's probably where I am. And I don't know whether you should never fear any sort of discussion about it. You shouldn't fear the hot gossiping, and you shouldn't fear the deep dive analysis or intellectual side of it. It's all of it enriches how we follow the sport, and then you can gravitate to what you like.
Yeah.
It's a little bit. So the premise of 360 is to find two people who have nothing in common in life other than football and stage a nightly conversation where you'll be able to connect with one or the other. And I think we would say, I've got my people and Robbo's got his people, and his people roll their eyes at me and my people roll their eyes at him. And when I want to talk about the goal review, I get a minute and 11 seconds and I'm on the clock, and Robbo can be as verbose as he likes about whatever topics have his passion.
And you can find middle ground.
Yeah, and that's the, if you truly believe that your entree into any conversation in my hometown is footy,
yeah,
then that's the nightly staging of it. This is your way into the conversation around footy through one or the other.
I've heard it said a few times now with social media and platforms like Twitter or X or Instagram, where if your political views or your religious views or whatever are put, they're the first instance you meet someone, and that's the first discussion you had. Whereas if you meet someone at the park, or if you meet someone in the shops or at the workplace, that discussion is maybe never brought up, or it's the 12th thing, first
yeah,
being, what are you having? What, isn't it a nice day? And it's such a good point. It's what I do like about 360, it's a daily, just nice chat. I'm curious to know, you seem to have a really, really good knack for saying the right thing at the right time. And I've been doing this stupid show for 12 months now, and there's so many moments in footy where I'm just kind of compelled to go further, and then on the drive home go, I regret saying that, or yes, I've gone too far, or I don't actually think that, or there's been moments in the last 15 years, I think, in football where I've often gone, what's Jared going to say about this? And that will be my opinion, whether it's on Offsiders or 360 or here. How do you, is it just your nature to have a pretty balanced approach, or do you have a mantra in your head or anything else?
It's probably a mixture of everything. So as you go along, you understand how you come at issues and what you believe in. So you get better at seeing something and trusting your instincts. These are the things I believe in. That's what that looks like, and I'm prepared to say it. And, you know, there is a bit of a, so say what you mean. So have your words right, and then mean what you say. Don't confect stuff. So that's what I work on. And then in the moments, you either do or you don't. And the ones where you don't, they'll torture you sometimes. It's every now and then you'll get to a game and 3 days later you'll go, oh, that's what I should have said. That's 3 days too late. But the beauty of the challenge and what makes it so invigorating is if you can reach for the right words at the right time, it's just incredibly satisfying.
Yes.
And so the two different, when you call in a game, I think fundamentally you've got two responsibilities. One is to convey the action, particularly on radio, to those who aren't seeing it, and to share it with them, to envelop them in it, and to get them to feel what you're seeing. And the second is to do justice to what's happening on the field, because you are in the hands of the athletes and the footballers. So, and if you can do that well and help the moment soar, then that's the most satisfying part of it. Mm. And then with issues, it's having a strong enough sense to have the flinch reaction. So sometimes it takes a couple of hours to get to your stance on something. You let it percolate. But sometimes you've got to hit it, and then you have to trust your instincts that if you're waiting on what I will think, I reckon you'll go this way because this is how he views things. So, and that's what I mean is, if you gravitate towards my way of thinking, that's great. But there's plenty of others that
yeah,
you might align with, and it's a bit like movie reviewing. Is find the guy who or girl who sees movies the way that you like them and go with them. And there's this whole spectrum of others, but find the one that talks to you and cling to that as your starting point.
I love that. These are my questions. I have two more questions. One is, sports coverage, how has it changed in the time you've been working in it? And do you think it's moving in the right direction? Do you, like, how do you feel about where it's sitting? And
So we've gone in a very American direction, which is totally understandable. So I think there are times where it feels like the loudest voice wins. And that's definitely true in the American market.
Oh, yeah.
So I have the privilege of going to Super Bowls each year and getting to see a bit of that firsthand. So the dominant forces in the US sports market now are Stephen A. Smith and Pat McAfee. Like, that's pretty extreme. I'm a Joe Buck guy. I'm an Al Michaels guy. So we have gravitated towards that, and that the really short, punchy stuff that gets disseminated. So what are they? I think they call it aggregation in the States. So I might talk for 3 hours across a morning, but it's that 40 seconds that gets picked out and highlighted and analyzed. Now, my 40-second clips are much more likely to be reasonable, shall we say. But the 40 seconds of – so I think Cane Corns is a total genius in this space. And his stuff hits, and it hits hard. And then everyone spends their whole time dissecting and reacting to the 40 seconds that Kane had on this, this, and this. I imagine there are moments where he finds that frustrating, as he's done 3 hours and there are three 40-second pieces that define everything. That's the biggest change, I think. And then the way that we cover the game, it's just grown. Ratings have grown, audiences have grown, the number of organizations covering the game has grown. You go to a test cricket summer and there are two stations mounting completely separate broadcasts. That's not how we grew up, is it?
Yeah.
As you were hostage to Channel 9 for footy and for cricket and Channel 9 for
yeah.
The choice and the diversity of that, I think, is really rich, and then it opens up so many opportunities in the profession. As people talk about journalism like it's a dying craft, as broadcasting has, I don't think, ever been more broad, and there's never been more opportunities.
Do you find there's still an audience for in-depth thought and discussion and close to what you do?
That's the only reason I'm sitting here. Yeah. So I would say yes. And I feel like these SEN studios are the best case study of
100%.
That. And I'm just, not to sort of labor the point, but you want every show to be totally different. You don't want to hear the same, you don't want to be slapped around the face with the same thing all day long.
Yeah.
So that you can find what suits you, or you can get the full cross section, and I might drive you mad, but then Dwayne will come on and you find a great comfort in that. I think the worst possible result would be just to line everything up and it's all the same.
Yeah.
So yeah, my personal view is yes. And then you're probably best to answer whether there's an audience for that.
I think so. That's kind of, yeah, we all enjoy your stuff so much. So I'm glad to hear that it's funny. The day that Waitley started, you did an opening mantra about what it's going to represent. I think you've accomplished it wonderfully. Thank you for being something to listen to every morning. That's quite positive and exciting. You cannot miss it, whether it's David King or it's whoever else that's on. It's fantastic.
So you surround yourself with the best people. I feel like I have the best people.
Mm.
So Mondays with David King is Nathan Buckley. I love Nathan Buckley with my whole heart. I hope he goes back. I hope I lose him. I hope he goes back to coaching at some point. And then there's all sorts of different ways to do it. Like, Shannon Gill, now we do a Know Your History. As people think opening round was the first time that had ever happened, it's not. As we've had weird starts to seasons all around the place.
Yeah.
So to be able to recount that is really worthwhile, I think, in a debate. Hardcore strategy. If you want to understand the trends of the game, then Brenton Sanderson will give you that. Luke Hodge, you know, the strongest leader that we've had in that generation. So surround yourself and then have really good conversations around footy. I feel like that's the way in. And that's what we try for every day.
Love that. The last questions. The WWE and the AEW are the two competing factions at the moment. Do you engage with modern wrestling in the way that they're existing at the moment, or are you from afar?
So I'm from a different era. So when I say WrestleMania 3 is the peak of civilization alongside the 89 grand final, I believe that. So the WWE, I think, has been so interesting and continues to be so, is they were forerunners in the way that packaged television was made. So before really anyone else was making those sophisticated music, build up pieces, is that was their shtick. And then the capacity to build a storyline over a long time. The modern setup is they are trying to cross over out of the wrestling space into the mainstream space. Mm. And I give you John Cena and The Rock at the Academy Awards. It's working.
Logan Paul the other way as well.
My goodness. So we went to their event just for laughs in Vegas.
This is The Rock slap. Yeah, yeah. Turning heel.
Yeah. And then watched as, you know, 100, it had 100 million views as just so rapidly. So they infiltrated Super Bowl week, which is very hard to do, and staged their own event and then just had this massive exposure from it. So I think they're absolutely fascinating in a modern media space now that their ownership has changed.
Yeah.
And they have different ideas, I think. They don't want to talk to that large, dedicated community anymore. They want to talk to everybody. So they are an amazing study, and I listen to the podcasts around the business of it, and when they do the insightful interviews and the history of it, I'm probably more interested than that. I am more interested yeah. in that than the bouts that take place, but I do think their capacity to build a storyline over a long period of time, and then they deliver it like a sporting event. So yeah, I'm intrigued by it. My absolute days of wrestling are back when I yeah. was young. But in our modern sporting media world, they are such an interesting player.
That's beautifully said. I agree with that completely. Did you see Ironclaw?
Remind me?
This is the Von Erich family from the 80s. This is
oh, not yet. Not yet. From
him. I'm keen to hear your review.
I love movies. I find I'm so time challenged to get to them now.
I've listen to a fair bit. You talked with Adam Zwire about your hopes to maybe write a movie one day.
Yes, yes. Well, that's, yeah. Well, so I wrote movies for the Herald Sun for a while.
Did you really?
Yeah. So Lee Patch was the reviewer and I was the writer and the editor of Hit magazine, which was the Thursday lift out, and traveled a lot. There's sort of all sorts of strange little projects I have. And I would love to do that one day, not for a moment suggesting that I can and how difficult that would be. But when you see a brilliant movie, this is the thing with Oppenheimer is studios lost faith in their audiences. Give me a movie that is dense. Trust me to sit through it for 3 hours and to listen to it and to understand the nuances of it. And I don't need massive action. I can get that elsewhere. Give me that movie. Finding the movie that you truly love is joyful, and then I'm a repeat on them. So before the Oscars, I wanted to see Oppenheimer again just to make sure it was as good as I thought it was, and I watched it on the plane coming home from Vegas, which is never the ideal setup, but it was just so good, and yes. I'll watch that again in years to come because that was the moment where instead of giving us the multiverse and this and that, just trust us, give us dense, great material. And trust us that we'll come to it. I'm so glad to see it revered in the way that it is.
One of the EPs on this podcast is Jack Quaid, who plays one of the creators of the bomb, the Bongo
really?
Boy. Jack Quaid. He's a friend of ours, but he won the when we record this, he won it yesterday or the day before. But he talked about the way that that film is directed. The person behind that camera is an Australian Directors Guild Award winner, so he's gone below his pay grade today. But the way that he directs the films is fascinating, where I think Jack showed up on the first day for this character, this fully entrenched, rich, interesting person, and he said, should I do this accent? And Nolan went, oh, give it a go, I don't know. There's no real connection at all between this script and the art department on that film making a full White House in 3 days. It is truly, the fact that it's made essentially $1 billion for a film about a historic figure is really positive and awesome.
Yeah, yeah. And then the moment in time when it's released with Barbie. Now, it took me a little while to get to Barbie, and I wasn't sure that I wanted to, but my wife and two daughters saw it and thought it was hilarious and poignant. And so through them, I was able to get to see it. And it was excellent in its own. Like, I was quite shocked by how much I enjoyed it and how much was going on there. And again, that's the two extremes on the same day, choose the movie that you want to see. But I bet if you sample both with the right mindset, there's plenty there for you. So I feel like that's such an encapsulation of what's possible. Instead of just taking a position going, no, that's boring or that's silly, take the whole experience in, and that they were both brilliant in their own ways.
I don't know if there's award. I don't know if it's eligible for any awards, but the discussion between yourself and Dwayne handover, there was a handover last year where both of you, very definitive voices, talked through Barbie on SEN. I would have loved to have seen the temper text at that time, but that was my favourite part of last year, maybe.
I think somewhere in the back of our minds, we're thinking podcast there.
Yeah. Oh, a movie review by you and Dwayne-o. Do you know his whole theory with Draft, the rapper Draft?
Maybe. Tell me.
There's a Perth rapper called Draft.
Right.
And he does a song called Rapunzel. And Dwayne, on the way to any game he's calling, will put his music on because he loves the rhythm and the meter in which he does rapping. So we kind of connected them up, and Draft heard that and was very excited about
that's
that.
That's great.
But did you listen to any rappers or anything on the way?
No, I don't. I'm not sure whether I have any pre-game rituals
really?
Anymore. I like to be distracted by other things wherever I can. So whenever I read during a footy season, I won't read anything sport.
Oh, great.
So as soon as footy season starts, my release is each night, the 20 minutes, just read something else. I don't mind what it is.
Yeah.
My wife, I just pick whatever she's been reading and she's enjoyed, I'll grab hold of, and, you know, silly murder mysteries or something deep, whatever. But anything other than sport, just to get a release from that. And that's what, if we can ever find time to go to the movies, that's what that is. And I'm a bit of, I think Dwayne and I love going to the movies on my own.
Yeah, it's better. Yeah,
I'm totally, you know, if Claire and I can find time together, we'll go to the Rivoli.
Yep.
And that's our night out. But if there's no time, I'm love ducking into a movie on my own and just having the solitude of it and taking it and sitting down the front. I don't want to see or interact with anyone else.
You agree with that, don't you, Max?
Yes, big
time. Yeah, you don't need someone ruining it for you. We put you in a song, by the way, Jared. I don't have it here today, but I'll play it for you another time. Okay. It's your Collingwood is closed like the Grim Reaper.
Yeah.
We've put that into a big drop. Pies fans absolutely love it. So we'll send that to you at some point. But Jared, this is very, very generous. Thank you so much for your time. You can listen to Jared every morning at 9 a.m. And the SEN Sync app is now available for you to listen to their coverage while it's happening.
Thank you very much for having me on.
Thanks, Jared. Folks, there's a whole bunch of autumny jobs outside calling. They could be saying, dig me, stake me up, ready for winter. Fact is, there's one name who'll be standing alongside you, helping you get stuck into any job over and over, and that name is as Aussie as backyard cricket, Cyclone. Sure, some gun tools are cheaper, but they won't last as long as Cyclone, because I'll tell you why. Cyclone tools are made for Australians. Get autumn done, grab your Cyclone tools from Bunnings, Mitre 10, and selected independent stores. More at cyclone.com.au.